What's up, everybody? It's been a minute. Season three. We are the Fresh Delivery Show, a show about anything and everything and all that you need to know about pop culture, current events, relationships, social justice, mental, physical, emotional health, travel, food, reviews, music, and entertainment. And it features candid conversation with co-hosts and audience. If this is your first time checking us out, you can download us on the Anchor app, but you can also follow us on all podcast formats on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and now Spotify. I am your host with the most. I am the Shaolin Fantastic. And we are kicking off season three with a special guest from the DMV area. He is, you ready for this? He's a writer, recording artist from the PG County area of Maryland who makes thoughtful melodic quasi-trap music with visceral undertones of the blues. He holds on to the hope that love, transparency, and honesty and can create a reality that it like experienced individuals can live in without feeling the need to escape. Ladies and gentlemen, we got Boots in the house. What's up, my dude?
What's good, child? Good to be here.
Right?
Virtually.
Virtually, man. We've actually kind of like known each other for a little bit. You know what I mean? Like we've been, you know, we talked.
Couple years now.
Yeah, a couple years, man. How's everything going?
Everything is going it's hectic in a good way, man.
Yeah. I mean, obviously.
It's hectic and
COVID's like a blessing and curse, right?
Oh, more of a it came in like a blessing and it's going out like a mild curse, I would say.
Yeah, I definitely feel you on that.
It's been like 65% blessing, I'm gonna say.
Yeah. So I mean, hopefully with the new jumpstart, you know, we're here to help, you know, to have our audience understand who you are and learn about your new album that's coming out and just kind of get to know you and stuff like that. So hopefully everything that we move forward with this, it just actually just helps boost everything and just a lot more positive things going for you and stuff like that. So first things first, tell us about your new music that's coming out in your album. Tell us a little bit about that. Going right into it, bro.
Yeah. So it's hard to believe someone who writes for a living would be shorter words. I would say that best way to describe the music that I'm about to put out is kind of just like a long time coming. And by that I mean like, you know, I always had a lot to say. And had a hard time figuring out how to say it. And I feel like I found the right voice, the right words, the right tune. You know, so it's been like, I've been rapping for about 11 years. Now that I think about it, and I feel like I finally found a voice that I was. Like I feel like I finally found my voice. So yeah, it's been a long time coming with all of this. Yep. And so I'm just telling that story, man.
I definitely feel you. So your album is called I'd Be Alright and releases April 1st, right? April 1st on Amazon Music. So definitely check out the links. We'll have the links in our podcast and as well as our Facebook and Instagram and all that good stuff. So your name, it's a very unique name. I've known you for a little bit. We've known you as Boots. Tell the people why Boots SSJ. Tell us about that.
All right.
Represent.
All right. Okay. So Boots actually came from Boots actually came from when I was 16 years old and I was on, pushing carts at a grocery store. And this old head walks up to me, thinking I'm somebody else probably, and he's just like, my man Boots, what's good, baby? And I'm just like, I don't know who this guy is, but I'm like, shit, it's all love, man. What's good with you? He's like, all right, and he just kind of keeps moving. It's like one of those exchanges.
Is he like an older dude?
Yeah, he's probably like in his 40s at the time. I'm like 16, seven.
So he's kind of like OG a little bit.
Yeah. But I mean, I ain't never seen a man before in my life. I don't even know who that was. But like, you know, my one of my coworkers who was at one of my coworkers was standing next to me. He's like, boots. And I'm like, I don't know, but I like it. So I ran with it. So I just started calling myself that. If I'm like meeting with motherfuckers that I don't want them to know my government just yet.
Yeah.
I just introduced myself as Boots. It was more interesting to me than introducing myself as one singular letter.
True that. Stage name, man. It's just like mine. The show went fantastic.
So then when I started rapping like a year or so later, I was wondering what I would call myself,
Sorry about that. My bad. Technical.
All good. All good. I was wondering. I didn't want to interrupt whoever was talking, and then I realized it was me. So then it became Boots J, just cause Jermaine Cole, J. Cole. Yeah. This is before we knew about him, but yeah. So I just rocked with that, and then last year. I was a little tired of it. I was a little over it. I'd actually kind of gone through a mean transitional phase where I'd taken like a long hiatus from rapping, and then I still wanted it to be the same. But you know, I just wanted to change it. Like, I want to change it up just a little bit. So I decided to go with SSJ because I felt like I hit Super Saiyan when I got back in the booth for real. And you know, you remember what it took when you seen Dragon Ball Z. For Goku to hit Super Saiyan that first time, you know, I went through hell too.
Yeah.
So it just kind of made sense to me. Plus, I'm like kind of a subcategory weeb, so I'm real into anime. So it just all fit me like a glove.
Yeah. The way you describe, like when we was talking about this earlier before, you know, we start recording for the show and stuff like that. So for the listeners out there, obviously the people on live right now, you can't hear it, but for the podcast listeners, we actually have some of his tracks playing around in the background. But you said melodic quasi trap music. Like I've never heard of that, but you know what? When I hear that, it makes me drawn to it, makes me want to listen to it even more. And then when I hear the music and the sound of your voice and the lyrics, it actually does make sense. It's very melodic. And I feel like a lot of artists in general kind of just don't really have that right now. Maybe like a couple artists, but nothing, definitely not in this area, you know, and obviously, you know, we want to definitely support local artists because we do have a lot of big artists that come out of this area too.
Yeah. A lot of them, a lot of them. There's been like, there's actually, you see our area is known for like, kind of like, I hate to use this metaphor, but it's the whole crabs in a barrel thing.
Yeah.
So we had a hard time coming up with a sound, and like, you know, a lot of people say that we copy the styles of other places, but honestly like one. I don't like I'm sort of reeling back my opinion on that one because hip hop started in New York, and everybody who got on it was like, you know, imitating New York, and then the South switched it up, and then Chicago switching it up again. And we're gonna switch it up in our own way, because when you hear our artists, you can tell they're our artists. Like you can hear that slang.
The DMV slang.
You know, you can hear that mer.
Oh, your sound went out. Oh, technical difficulties.
yes. Sorry, I had to. Yeah, I someone calling my phone just now. I hope they don't, like I hope they don't start phone.
Nah, it's all good.
But anyways, what I was leading up to with that is that if you listen to like the sound now, as opposed to just like 4 years ago, like 2016, there's been like tremendous growth. There's been tremendous growth in people's style, their lyrics, their like, you know, it always starts out shaky, but it's really turning into something. Like, I really fuck with it. At first, I had to fuck with it because, like, you know, this is my city, these are my people, like, you know, this is my area. I cannot be like you know, I cannot hate, even if I like even if I don't fully understand.
Yeah. That makes sense.
You know, you see that growth and I realized that my faith wasn't misplaced.
Yeah.
You know?
So speaking about, you know, coming from the DC, Maryland, Virginia area, you're from Maryland, you know, PG County area. For those that know PG County, PG County's got some really nice parts, but it's also got some parts that are not the greatest also as well, but it's an emerging area that's kind of growing still at the same time too. And, you know, obviously, like we mentioned about, you know, our hip hop, our rap scene out here. Like, let me ask you this. What is hip hop to you? Good question, right?
I guess best way for me to sum it up would probably be what I have an uncle who's like you know, who's an amazing guitarist. He's from the Filipino side, you know, where our people are known for musical talent. Yeah.
Especially karaoke.
So he's just been like a working guitarist, like, you know, in LA. But I imagine hip hop is to me what I imagine punk rock was to him in the 80s.
Mm, gotcha.
Just like, you know, his way, like because music is like music is quite often rebellious. Yeah. Like pop, like, you know, especially like, you know, especially like not mainstream, but not fringe, you know what I'm saying? It's always rebellious. And the same way that rock and roll, like, you know, broke all the rules back in the 50s and 60s when it was emerging, hip hop did that, like, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s when it was emerging. And like, you know, it shocked people. It always shocks it always brings a shock to the status quo of what people think it's supposed to be.
It pushes the envelope.
You know, no one's exempt. Exactly. No one's exempt from it. No one's safe from it. And like, you know, that's just my driving force, really.
Yeah,
because without it, I really don't know what I got. You know,
no, that definitely makes sense, man. I mean, hip hop has definitely changed a lot of people's lives, and you know, we have to acknowledge that it is a black and you know, Puerto Rican culture, but now it's very globalized. You know, and
of course,
for those that are, you know, are not watching our video but are listening in, you know, so your back. What is your ethnic background by any chance?
I'm my dad's from the Philippines. He's from Ilocos Norte. He's Ilocano, and my mom is Irish American from North Carolina.
You speak Tagalog? Uh-oh. We're going to have to get you an Android or something.
I'm so sorry, bro. I forgot to turn off all my alarms. I got people calling me.
Hey, man, you're a busy dude, man. But can you speak Tagalog?
No, because for two reasons. One, I really didn't. Well, for one, my family speaks Ilocano. It's it's less common than what you than most Filipinos that you would meet in America. However, in Hawaii, most of the Filipinos that you meet there are Ilocano. It's kind of like Ilocanos are more like the country people. They're the mountain people. They're like, you know, the rice, like, you know, it's all jungle and rice paddies out there. My dad's from a rural area. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, he's literally from the dirt, from the jungle, like, you know. So hey. Got a lot of respect for him off of that.
So with uh-huh. music, you know, music has changed so much over the years, especially with technology. Like, do you feel the internet has made a better impact on the music scene, or it made it worse? Because especially being an artist now, you know, and obviously the times have definitely changed, you know what I mean?
Okay, so I was an outside kid who turned into an inside adult. like you know, I got like the last couple of years, like, I mean, I've always been like, you know, a little more shy, a little more introverted, but I would rather be like, you know, out, like, one my like you know, my home life as a child, like, for the majority of it, kind of sucked. So I hated being in the house, like, you know, I was always trying to be outside. But I like, as an adult, now that I got my own shit and I can, like, you know, entertain myself, I prefer to, like, you know, just stay low key, be chilling. And I love that the internet has made it easier to connect and promote, and, like, you know, it's like be out in the world without being out in the world. So in a sense, like, you know, aside from like, you know, shows and touring, which is like, you know, which is to come. Besides that, I only have to go out in the world, like, you know, when I want to, or when I really need to. But as far as promotions, I don't have to, like, you know, I don't have to try and, like, you know, sell my CD on the train, because yeah. because in like 2009, when I had, like, you know, when I recorded my first couple of demos, I was handing out my shit on the orange line and the green line. Yeah.
I definitely think entrepreneurship with the internet has blessed it, you know, has made it that saying, work smarter, not harder. You know, mm-hmm. and obviously, you know, you can do everything from
exactly from your
the technology in your hand, man. You know, this is like a walking computer in your hand, and we got computers and everything now. You know, but have you performed yet, or have you started to kind of look into that, or do music videos for your to promote your music?
So all right, so. I used to perform, like, you know, back in like 2011, 2012. I think the last time I ever got on a stage was probably 2014. That's when my life kind of took a turn, was around 2014. But in recent years, I haven't done. I have shot a couple of videos, like, you know, on some amateur shit. You know, just like some, you know, some, like, you know, a girl who was like a cinematography major, you know, just, you know, we didn't know anybody else who had, like we didn't have, you know, we didn't have a camera. We didn't know anybody else who did have a camera. So like, you know, it was good for what we could come up with, like, you know, back when we were like 21, 22, but we're actually trying to get visuals together now. So that I have something to show when I, like, you know, when this thing fully goes into promotion.
Gotcha. So being an artist,
but like, yeah, no, not in recent years.
Yeah. So being an artist, do you have a production team, or do you, you know, meet different, you know, producers, or do you produce on your own? Do you, like, how does your process work? Like, tell me, like, what goes in your creative state of mind? Like, when you start writing, do you listen to music first? Do you just write in general, and then you just bring your stuff to the studio? Because, you know, as a hip hop fan, we hear stories about, you know, Biggie, Big L. We hear stories about Pac. You know, like, they're completely different styles. Jay-Z. Jay-Z doesn't write, yeah. apparently. He just listens to everyone else, and then he just goes in and records, you know? Like, what's your process?
You know what? You just jogged my memory about that whole Jay-Z not writing thing.
Yeah.
My mind's just blown all over again. It wasn't like it wasn't 03. Okay. So, to answer your questions, sequentially, I do have a production team. In fact, I would say that I probably have one, like I probably got the best team, man. I got the best team. There's about five of us in total. All of us are like all of us are more or less are more or less artists. Like, you know, you're gonna be seeing more. You're gonna be seeing more come from my camp as time goes on. But I have probably like one of my producer is. I think he's one of the best in the area. He's certainly the most underrated in the area. On Instagram, he goes by @mixedbymoses, and he is he is highly sought after. Like, you know, especially in our scene, and he's not actually known yet, but. But like, you know, anyone who comes from out of town to DC to record is gonna get directed to my man Moses. He's dude's got that heat. He's definitely the best engineer I've ever worked with. And I'm not just saying that because he's been my best friend since we was like 11. but it's actually true.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my that's my business partner. It's a couple of us were we're all shareholders in our business. So we got a good division of labor. It's always fire when it's always fire when we link, and I believe in my team first, and that's why because they're the ones who give me the strength to really like push myself, to really put that faith in myself.
No, that definitely
because I see how hard they go, and I'm just like, well. I will not like, you know, and I'm and I just look at them and I'm like, oh man, I will not be outdone.
I mean,
not by my own guys.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense because you got chemistry. So, you know, when you guys were younger, and then now that you are on a professional level, the chemistry definitely makes things a lot more mm-hmm. creative and more fun and stuff like that. So let's just play like this, like, yeah, little man. 20 we start, question. I was gonna ask you, if you could open a show for any artist, who would you want to open up for?
Who would I open up for? That's a good one. I'm not really sure because I don't really go to concerts anymore, so I don't really know how these guys are on stage or how they conduct a show. So yeah. I wouldn't really have much of a frame of reference on that. But who my favorites are, who I would wanna work with. Right now my favorite rapper out is Rilo Rodriguez. I don't know if you know him, but he's out of Mobile, Alabama, and he's super gritty, man. Like he definitely epitomizes the whole mumble rap thing. But the thing is, you can still get what even though he's like barely pronouncing his words, you can still get what he's saying, and it's still like it all makes perfect sense. It's all cutting it, like. Like, you know, he's got some really cutting lines. So, like, you know, that's that's a, like, you know, I really fuck with his style. One of my two of my all time favorites are Currency and Fabulous.
Currency, so, dang! I haven't heard his name in a minute. He's nice.
Yeah,
Currency is nice.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you know, he's one of the guys that made me really want to be a spinner. So mad, like, you know, to the point where I'm almost mad that he branded it before I thought of it.
Yeah,
you know, those are my two. Those are the Fabulous, like, you know, big source of big source of inspiration for me because I just fucked with how laid back and like almost kind of blasé he was, like, you know, something like some people think that makes him boring to listen to, but I like he was just so cool to me, like I was like yo, I want to be like that.
Yeah,
I really want to be like that. That's kind of what I'm going for, just in my own way. And then I would say my low key one of my low key favorite artists is technically his name is pronounced Black, but everyone knows him as Six Lack. So because he spells it the number 6 LACK. So I guess the six is an Atlanta reference. Anyways, not to go too much into it, but yeah, those are the four. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I go on tangents sometimes. Those are the four that I really fuck with. So I guess I'd like to open for any one of them. But right now, I'll open for anybody.
Yeah,
I'll open for somebody of a different genre. Well, yeah, I'm not too picky.
I mean, let's be real about it. Kid Rock opened up for NWA. People didn't even know about that. Kid Rock of all people.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So it's okay. Like
I would probably have to.
That was back in the 80s, man. That's a...
I don't know how closely associated I want to be with Kid Rock.
Yeah. But
not in these times, man. Like, you know.
No, that's so true. That's so true. So let me ask you this. You know,
that's a dope come up story, though.
It is. It definitely is. So let's go back to, let's talk about like PG County. Like, and you said, you know, growing up, it was kind of a little difficult. Like, what kind of trouble did you used to get into when you were younger? Or like, how was it growing up? And do you feel like your childhood impacts your music and your writing?
Yeah, more than I'd like it to, because I've spent so much time, like, you know, trying to like, you know, just trying to outrun it. And it was like, I would say this, like, I'm the oldest of three. And, you know, my parents, like, you know, they had set themselves up right, but shit just didn't work out for them for the longest. Like, you know, they were supposed to be doing better than what they were. And I don't know. And you know, like, it's been like, you know, it's been like financially ups and downs because, like, you know, there were some good times, but there's been tragedy stricken my family, like, you know, quite a bit, especially in the early 2000s. Like, I think when I was when I was 13, my dad had accepted a job out in Arizona, and so we moved out there, and it was a good job. And so, like, you know, we had a nicer house. We had cable. I never had no cable, like, you know, like till I was about 13. So you know, it was like it was sweet. I was kind of like I was kind of happy because like, you know, just growing up, I always you know, just overheard my parents and could understand more than what they thought I could about like, you know, what's going on and like what kind of position we're in, but it was always money. Like, you know, we need more. What can we do? Like, I don't know what we're going to do. All those key phrases that just like, you know, as a kid, like they don't think you understand that shit, but you do.
Yeah.
And so I kind of felt bad because I felt like I was just like, and here I am, like, you know, eating up the food and like, you know, using the electricity, like, you know, things that an 11-year-old and 12-year-old ain't supposed to be thinking about, you know? So it's just it was a constant state of anxiety, because up until like 2 years ago, I didn't even know I had anxiety. I didn't know any of that. Like, and it was just like, you know, I was I was different. I didn't grow up it's PG County. It's mostly black kids in the neighborhood. I'm a little different. I stand out. I draw attention. It's to be expected. Like, you know, especially amongst kids. But you know, that wasn't really even a big deal to me. But I would say, like, you know, as a kid, like, you know, being outside wandering and like, you know, wandering in places that my folks told me to stay away from, like, you know, I saw I saw a lot of wild shit. I saw like, you know, I had some near misses myself. I just it was just kind of like taking in the world around me and just realizing how terrible it is out there. It was kind of like I would see a picture that was like, you know, depicting like, you know, people being happy, and I'm just like, yo, how can like what's with the smiles? Like, do they not understand what type of fucked up shit happens out here?
Yeah.
Like, and it's just like that's the way I've been my whole life. It's just like somehow I've always known that positivity and stability is a fragile thing. I just like I always knew that even before I could understand, like, you know, what it was I was thinking. But like, it just caused me to move cautious as a kid. It caused me to, like, you know, deeply paranoid as a kid, and it all carried with me into adulthood. So it's just like, in a sense, when I think about it, nothing really that bad actually happened to me as a kid. That doesn't happen to most kids, but because I had like, you know, undiagnosed anxiety and like, you know, acute paranoia that I didn't even realize till like just like really like 2019. That's why I felt this way. Like, I've spent my whole life just like kind of trying to woo-saw myself and trying to, like, you know, appear like unbothered and like, you know, unscathed, when really this when really you know, it's just killing me inside.
Yeah,
you know. Definitely. and I touch on that a lot in my music.
Definitely, social emotional health has
that, like, I touch on that. That's probably
yeah. It's definitely we've seen an increase over the last, let's say, 15 years. You know, social emotional health, and especially now with the COVID, you know, we're definitely seeing, I've seen it myself, you know, just being cooped up in the house, and it gives you opportunity to either grow and do better for yourself, or it's either you're gonna take a step back and you're just gonna be like stuck in this box, you know what I mean? So
yeah, I think it was because you know, when people are tired of hiding that shit. People are tired of the stigmas that come along with like, you know, especially you see this in immigrant immigrant communities all the time. What's the one thing, like when we're feeling this way, what's the one thing they tell us to do? They tell us to
suck
pray.
It up.
They tell us to take our ass to sleep. They tell us to man up, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of like, you know, that's fucked up, because And especially like, because like I halfway agree with it because no, because one, like, you know, nobody wants to hear you complaining about shit all the time.
Yeah.
But again, it's like, bro, we got shit to get done. We got like, you know, we got to get this money. We got to escape this shit. Like, you know, you can process that shit once we're in a better position, but we got to get off the block. We got to get like, you know, we got to get into better houses. We got to get into more stable positions. So so it's all, but you know, it just, I think it all just kind of came to a fever pitch of people trying to like, you know, trying to fit that American ideal of strength and whatever else, you know. I just got tired of that shit and just like, you know, like we just want to be ourselves now. I know I do.
Yeah, definitely. So, I can definitely say that about the Asian community. You know, we're taught to suck it up a lot, right? Like, just kind of deal with it and just don't really speak about it and just keep moving as best you can. Then eventually it bottles you up inside, you know what I mean?
Real quick, what, you're Thai?
Yeah, I'm Thai.
Oh, okay. Dope. I used to work at this restaurant in Chevy Chase called Sushi Co. and half the staff was Thai.
Yeah? Nice.
Yeah, man. Y'all like y'all cool people. Like y'all some cool people. Like they all like to get all their food together, like when it's like when we close between services.
Yeah.
They get like you know, they get their family meal together, they get whatever else they brought from home. They sit at they sit at the table and just like talk to each other and just like it's all like family style.
Yeah.
Around the table, and if you choose to sit within proximity, they all like they offer you food. I love it. I miss them.
I feel like I see that a lot with Southeast Asian. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like the dinner style is very tapa mm-hmm. style. Everyone's got a Southeast Asian
tapa,
you
know? Style.
Yeah, man. But so let me tapa style.
Yeah, like.
Let me ask you this: since you have a, you know, an Asian American background, you know, do you find it hard being in the hip hop scene, especially with all the stuff that's going on right now, or is it kind of just very natural and easy? Because let's be transparent about it. There's a lot of haters out there because they're gonna be like, oh well, if you ain't black, you ain't Puerto Rican. You know what I mean? Do you feel like that happens to you, or not really because of your upbringing from PG? Because that plays a part in it too, where you grew up.
it's definitely a mixed bag. Like with these reactions, because there are some people who are gonna like one. I'm like, to a lot of people, I'm not really like, I'm not discernibly Asian. Like I'm like really ambiguous. Most people think I'm either Native or
Hawaiian
or Hispanic. I've gotten that too. But you know, I usually get like Native and Hispanic, but it's like the perception varies person to person. I do got some people that like, you know, like you that like you said, like, you know, oh, if you're not black, then you know, it's like the whole culture vulture thing. I just tune that out and let them like, you know, think what they it, like, you know, I just let them think what they want to think. I don't even bother to dispute, just because then just because then like, you know, that can be a polarizing situation, and yeah. it's honestly just kind of not that serious to me. And at the same time, I understand where the like you know, I understand where the mentality comes from. And like, you know, just the system that is built on that breeds thought processes like that. So it's kind of like it's kind of like I just have to keep an open mind and just be thoughtful to like, you know, what someone else knows and understands, and just kind of let it rock because for real, like, you know, if they don't fuck with me, they don't fuck with me. That's all it is. I don't know why. I don't exactly care why.
What's that saying? What's that saying? Can't please everyone. Fuck it. Right? You just can't please everyone. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. But then I got some people that are really that. Then you got some people who are like, you know, the antithesis of that. Whereas though, it's like they'll ask me like, you know, where I'm from, what's my ethnicity, like, you know, with like you know, when they hear me speak and they hear my music. And then I actually get this a lot. I say this, like, they ask me where I'm from, and I'm like, oh, I'm Filipino. My dad's from the Philippines. They're like, hey, I love Filipinos. And I've gotten a few responses like this, I'm like, yo, our people's got more in common than a lot of people think. And some people just be like, I get that response a lot. And that one gives me life. So really, like, I get the negatives, the positives, and, like, you know, just everything in between, too many to really categorize them. So I really just say, fuck with me, you fuck with me. If you don't, you don't.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. So speaking about music and being of a different ethnic background in this genre. So, like, one of the things I saw mm-hmm. when you posted was about the Bruno Mars and Leave the Door Open. It's a big song right now. What's your take on that? Because a lot of people are like, some people are hating on it, and some people are saying it's like the greatest song of all time. Do you share? I mean, it's open forum, bro.
I know. To the people who saying that Bruno Mars is appropriating, all I'm gonna say is, okay, understandable. You know, that's it, like, you know, you are entitled to, like, you know, that's something that you're entitled to. And especially, I'm not gonna, like, all right, this music that I make, this music that Bruno makes, this music that, well, Cassie's Blasian, so I think she is. Anyways, like, you know, it's like when you're a non-black POC or like, you know, even white, and you're partaking in, like, you know, in like the black music culture, you don't like, you know, you have to understand that you're in it, you're not of it, you know. This is like, you know, this isn't like, you know, this isn't like this isn't your thing. Not that we as Asians in America have a lot of options to choose from, because, like, you know, if we come here, like, you know, on some like if you came from Thailand and came out as a like you know, making whatever, like, music is popular, like you know, back there, or likewise with me in the Philippines, like, it's not gonna take off. So
yeah,
you choose like you know, so you're already in another, like, you know, you're already in another group's culture no matter which way you decide to go. But especially with black music culture, because it has been hijacked, like, it's been hijacked to no end, start like you know, since really since the black culture is further back than that, but we can call it that, like, you know, if we want to start with rock and roll. But so you know, it's just like I can't discount the feelings and like, you know, what people are saying when they say stuff like that, because I mean, look at Post Malone.
Yeah,
you know, like, he came in as White Iverson, Monty Ellis, like, you know, his style was dope to me, like, doper than I cared to admit, because he was some rich kid whose dad works for the Mavericks, I think. Mm. Like you know, but he has just has such a dope sound. So I was like, you know what, he's cool. He's cool in my books. But then you start to see, then, like, you know, in addition to him saying that rap music isn't lyrical, which means, like, you know, he doesn't have a frame of reference, Like, you know, if he's saying it, like, wow. Like anybody who said, anybody who says rap music isn't lyrical does not have a frame of reference. Like, you know, and he, so that, like, I lost a little bit of respect for that, but now he's not even on the hip hop charts anymore. He's on pop charts. I just heard he just did a cover of like, of I Only Want to Be With You by fucking Hootie and the Blowfish. Like, the fuck is this? Nobody asked for this. Who even still likes that song?
Yeah.
1994, man. Like, Hootie. Get the fuck out of here with that shit. I know you're into rock, but of all the classics you could have covered, you could have, like, oh my god.
You,
like,
pick Hootie. We know what you was trying to do, Post Malone. We know what you was trying to do.
I honestly felt violated when I heard that. But you know, I'm on a tangent again. But the point is, like, you know, he came in through like, you know, these like through avenues that were paved by black artists.
Yeah.
And he got and you know, he got, like, you know, he got paid. He got put on because of black artists.
Yeah.
And now he's not, and in disrespecting hip hop the way he did, like, you know,
that makes it worse.
Like, you know, but he was still, but you know, at least he was still rocking with, like, you know, at least he was still rocking with him at the time. And but now he's just like, he's just completely off the scene, and he's making, like, you know, he's making his money, he's topping charts. And he just, like, you know, it's like, it's like, it's, I can't say you forgot where you came from, because he surely didn't come from, he surely didn't come from the trouble. Like, you know, it is because it's like, did you see that movie, The Irishman?
No, I haven't. Pretty good. I've never seen it.
Okay. It was a mob movie about, like, you know, how you know, the Kennedys were tangled up with the mafia, and then, like, you know, and basically they said, like, you know, this was before the assassination. Like, you know, one of the bosses of the Buffalino crime family says, like, listen, he knows who he owes. Believe that, he knows who he owes. And artists like Post Malone, they don't know who they owe. That I think is the difference between appropriation and homage. Because like, I don't know too much. Like, I don't follow Bruno very closely. One, I love the song. Anderson .Paak is just too smooth. Like,
the song is fire.
Like if his style, yeah, it's like that's the kind of cognac that goes down so smooth you forget you're drinking.
Oh, I mean, no doubt, man. The moment, like, listen, the moment you hear that song, you know something's going down in the bedroom. Like, that means don't knock on the door, don't call my phone. You know, something. Yeah, it's nasty. You know what's going on. The thing that's funny, it's ironic that you say that. And, you know, when I was seeing some of the comments by, you know, people even on the national scale, you know, they asked Bruno Mars that question. They interviewed him. I think it was like Apple they interviewed him. And he said, you know, that's what he grew up on. You know, he's a 90s kid, you know, that grew up on New Jack Swing, R&B, soul, rock, blues. And if you really pay attention to Bruno Mars, I actually think he's probably one of the better artists in the last 20 years. Because he does his own music, he writes as well. But if you listen to every album, it's a different style of music. Like, when he first came out, it was like rock music, right? And then, like, the second album was like wedding, yeah, was like wedding ballads a little bit. And then all of a sudden it became New Jack Swing. And you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, and he flat out says that, you know, this is what he grew up on, and he's always going to pay homage, you know, to the style that it originally came from. You know what I mean? So I feel like that is a big difference between him and Post Malone.
I think what's important is that he, obviously Bruno knows who he owes. I know who I owe, you know, and with that, you got to put your dollars back. Like, like every rapper coming out the 90s used to say, you always put your dollars back. You always give it back to the community that raised you. You give it back to those that put you on. You look out for the people that looked out for you. And also, like, you know, he should be putting on artists, especially black artists from his area, because at the end of the day, like, you know, no matter like Eminem, like, I don't know if he outsold every rapper, but he outsold most rappers. Like, you know, Elvis outsold BB King, Robert Johnson, whoever the fuck. But you know what? At the end of the day, whether you do the right thing or the wrong thing, it belongs to them. And they're always gonna like it's always gonna belong to them. And if you forget that, God help you. You know,
you can get slandered.
If you forget where if you forget where you come from or who put you on, man, God help you.
Yeah, I feel like not just music, but I feel like it's like everything that you do in life, you know, for the people that inspired you or even the culture that helped you get you where you're at, you should always give back. And I just think that's like a very humanistic thing to do, you know, give back, especially to the youth, you know what I mean? Because it gives them, you know, an opportunity to grow and look that they have a path that they can keep moving forward with and stuff like that. So let me ask you this, because we're about to come up to the end of our show. But if you could change anything in the music industry, what would you change? Like anything that you want.
I would say, and there's a lot. I would say, one thing I hate seeing, this goes back to, like, you know, how I did things and why it took me so long to break out. But I hate seeing artists like have to like, you know, go into litigation for their masters. I hate seeing that. It was going on with like, you know, NBA YoungBoy tried to get his masters. Kanye is trying to get his masters. It's happened with with countless other artists that I can't name off the top of my head. But it wasn't something that I thought about. It wasn't an original thought by me. It was something that, like, you know, my guys kind of, it was something that my guys were thinking about, like, you know, when we heard about how record labels will just basically fuck all these artists over. And you know, basically they had just harped on, because as an artist, I do it for the love. You know, I'm not really in it for the money. I need the money, but I'm in it for the love. So, like, you know, I was just trying to land a deal or something. You know, I just wanted to get on, didn't care how. And then, like, you know, started with Moses, my partner, and he's like, bro, you gonna fuck, like I really think we need to go the independent route. And, like, you know, I didn't have an objection to it, but what I didn't realize is how much work that was going to be.
Let me ask you this real quick.
You know, even
how do you own your masters then? Like, school us on this real quick. Educate us. Like, how do you own your masters? Because, like, when I hear those stories, like, even going back from, like, New Edition, TLC, even Suge Knight and Death Row Records, like, he did it to Snoop. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people didn't read the contracts and what they didn't understand as the artist, the money that they were making was actually paying for their music videos, their expenses, etc. And I felt like, kind of looking at it, and, you know, me being like an 80s baby kind of growing up in the 90s, that people hated on Diddy, but what actually he did was smart was that he was part of the production team, so he had his hands in the song all over the place. A lot of people didn't like that, but in reality, that covered you. You know what I mean? Like, that gave you a little bit more ownership because you were a producer, you're a songwriter, et cetera, you know? And Master P completely changed that part of it. You know what I mean?
I think the biggest thing about me owning my masters that I value is the fact that I'm not ever going to fight somebody for creative control. The only other people who have a say in what comes out is my producer and my guys. Like, I listen to them when they say, I do my own writing. I'm really idealistic about writing, about doing my own writing, but they still coach me, give me tips, dot T's, cross the eyes, mm-hmm. cross yeah, the eyes, it. Dot, whatever. You know what I'm saying? So that's the type of collaboration that I'm into, but I don't ever want to fight somebody for creative creative control. That's the biggest thing I value about it. And the fact that I'll just make the moves that I want to make, that I think is the smartest move. And so basically what we did was of course, you got to get the exclusives to these beats that you're paying for. You got to pay attention to the paperwork there because some of these producers want their publishing. They want their royalties. So you got to you have to own the musical composition. You have to copyright them. Lyrics, so no one can steal that shit from you. And you need to blanking on all the terminology, but you know what a PRO is, right?
Well, what's that? What's PRO? Publishing royalties.
I know my man Martell wants to smack the shit out of me right now for not remembering this on the air, but basically we set everything up we got published, we got copyrighted, we made sure we did all the paperwork, and basically when producers want their credits and they are legally entitled to it, you have to give it to them. You have to negotiate with them. You're gonna have to part with something. So you're always gonna have to pay the piper. But this way, the way going independent, we really just we keep that to a minimum. We definitely keep that to a minimum. And in that, no one tells us what we have to do or what we have to say because when record labels get involved and they got opinions of your shit, they might think it's a little too avant-garde or something like that, so they make you change it. That would kill me. I wouldn't even see the point. If I was operating at the mercy of some asshole who just wants to make money.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So we are coming to the end of our show. So let me ask you one last question, and then you have the camera, sure. You have the audio, you have the video, you got a full 30 seconds.
Honestly, if you're trying to if
put you on the spot again.
If you're trying to cut for time, I could keep going. I'm having a great time right now.
So
what's your question?
So the question is, what kind of things, that you feel. Oh yeah, let me bluntly say, what is the best advice you've been given up to your age at this date? What's the best advice you've been given?
Oh my god. I've gotten a lot. Okay, you know what? You know what? I got multiple answers for this question. One of them is actually on the tape, on the EP. So, track three, Sushi Gang, right? It's actually like it all comes from conversations that I would always have with the head chef over there. His name is Hendri Chan. He's Indonesian. He grew up in Baltimore. You know, he's got you can kind of see the hard times when you look at, when you look at him. He's definitely not a gangster per se, but he's an OG to me.
Yeah.
You know. He's not a gangster, but he is gangster. There are a lot of lines are really just adapted, like key phrases that he always says. Like I said things like, you know, how he says it to me because he would keep harping on certain things, like, you know, telling me to drop my paranoia, telling me to, like, you know, move cleaner, move organized, move smart, like, you know, stuff like that, telling me not to stop. And it was so basically saying, like, focus on the good, like, you know, take the good parts from somebody and don't focus on the bad. Don't try to process the bad, just take the parts, take whatever you can use to help you. That right there might have been the best advice anyone's ever given me, is just to focus on the good in people. Like, you know, take pages out of other people's books for your own manual. So that was some of the best advice anyone's ever given me, and I keep, so much so that I felt the need to write an entire song to it. That's one dude I definitely got to thank, because, like, you know, he helped the, him and my best friend Moses, like, you know, pulled me out of that long bout of depression that kept me away from music for so long. Another great piece of advice is something that Moses told me, like, you know, because he knows me so well. That he's able to tell me about myself, and it pisses me off to no end. But that's why he's my best friend. You know, yeah, that's why he's my brother. He tells me one day, he's like, bro, when you get away from music, you get depressed. Why do you keep getting away from music? Why are you not back here doing this? And at the time, like, you know, I didn't know how. It was the furthest thing away from my mind, and I was miserable. I was miserable even when I was in restaurants hustling, I was working part-time in like a couple different restaurants, hustling my ass off, both legally and, you know, otherwise. I've never not been productive, but on an emotional level, I was extremely stagnant in that time. When he said that to me, and it wasn't even the first time he had said it to me, but when he said it to me, it just kind of boomed in my head. You are absolutely right. Why do you have this power over me? Like, I don't understand it. Yeah. But it's just been another hard knocks we come from. You know, it seems to be the only language we understand.
Yeah. Wow. I think yeah. those two advice that you just gave is very, very powerful. What I got from it was to always try to take the positive out of every situation that you're in and every person that you meet. And the other one is chase your passion. Mm-hmm. You know, if you lose your passion, then you lose drive. You feel sadness, depressed, and just an emotional roller coaster. But you want to always keep yourself motivated by just doing the things that you like doing, and be the best at whatever you're doing, you know? So, all right, my man, you got 30 seconds to promote yourself, your Instagrams. If you want to say something positive to the listeners out there, the mic is yours, man. All eyes on you.
Okay. All right. Well, my EP, I'll Be All Right, drops. How many days away is April 1st? Because that's when it drops. It drops on April 1st. Please, please go get it. It's on Amazon pre-order right now. That link is gonna go up in my bio. I got the fresh delivery link in there right now, but I'm about to change it right now. Go get that, and it's gonna be streaming on every platform that you've ever heard of, and some that you've never heard of. So it will be Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon, everything. It's all gonna be there. Videos are coming soon. I don't know when outside opens up, but when it is, you will see me on some stages. And something positive to the listeners: I love y'all. That's my positive messages to anyone who listens and fucks with my music. I love you. All right, because you're gonna be the reason I make it, and I will never forget that.
Most definitely. Thank you. Hey, I just want to thank you for for reaching out to me, and then we're making this interview. And like I said, we're going to work on some other things with you later on in the future. We definitely want to see the growth of your music, and definitely I'm gonna support your music, my dude. You know what I mean? So
this was amazing, man. I love this racket you got going on here. I fuck with it heavy. I was nervous about this shit, and now I want to keep going.
Wait till you come into the studio. When you come in the studio is a whole completely different feel, and then when we have our cast here, it's a completely different feel, you know? So most definitely.
Oh, that sounds like fun. Yeah. Can't wait.
So that's the end of our show. Make sure you follow us on our Instagram at The Fresh Delivery Show, also our Facebook as well. If you like what you heard and you want a replay of the episode, you can go on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Now we're actually on YouTube. Also, definitely check out our sponsors, linesofcharacters.com. Also, if you are in the Maryland area, check out Markoff's Haunted Forest in Poolsville, Maryland. Make sure that you check out Boots. You can check out his Instagram at Boots, BOOTSSSJ at Instagram. He also has his link in there. His debut album, I Be All Right, drops April 1st. Make sure you get that on Amazon Music. We are The Fresh Delivery Show, and we're out, y'all. Peace. Hey.
Yo, yo, yo. Hello, beautiful, sexy people. Thank you for listening and tuning in The Fresh Delivery Show. You can view and listen to our episodes on our YouTube channel or listen from your favorite media source, Anchor, Apple, and Google Podcasts, iTunes, and the Google Play Music Store, and Spotify. We appreciate you all. Stay safe, one love, and peace.